to Your Right to Speak's discussion on social justice and advocacy. This is episode 23, and I'm your host, Salvatore. On today's episode, we will be talking with a young adult who is an author and motivational speaker. I've been working closely with Mikel for the last few months at my job for Youth Initiative in supporting him in his Power program. We'll be talking with Mikel about his book, Core 7, Building and Mastering the Best You, and the Power program he has developed. Mikel, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Mikel, and I, as Salvatore said, I'm an author and I'm a motivational speaker. I have a passion for young people. My goal in life is to inspire people to pursue their purpose, to be influential, and to be leaders in their sphere of influence. I'm all about change.
That's great. I'm very excited to have you as a guest. We've been working closely for some time now, and I've come to know you as an awesome person. So
thank you.
Thanks for being on the show today.
For sure.
We're just going to dive into it. Can you tell the listeners about your book, Core 7, Building and Mastering the Best You, and why it was so important for you to write this book?
Sure. So Core 7 is essentially taking the big picture of life and breaking it down into seven smaller components. So in the book, The Core 7, which is a concept on holistic living, I take seven different components of life that I believe are the major components of life, and I teach people why they matter, how to focus on them, how to set goals on them, how to create a plan towards them so that you can learn how to be more efficient, more thoughtful, more intentional in your overall pursuit of life.
So for the listeners, and we'll post the link, the Amazon link to the book if they are interested in buying it. But generally speaking, what are the seven components to life?
Well, it is your family is number one. Your beliefs and your desires is number two. Your mindset is number three. Your physical and emotional well-being is number four. Your career is number five. Financial security is number six. And relationships is number seven, in that order.
So why put it in that order? And why did you find that these were the most important elements for people to focus on for their life?
Okay, well, firstly, I believe that family is number one simply because when you are born, the first life experience that you have is with family. And now that's whether you are with your mother, with a loved one. Generally speaking, most people's first encounter in life is with family. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a two-parent home, or we're not necessarily defining what that family looks like, but in some sense of a family structure is where we get our first experience in life. And that's why that's number one. Why relationships is last is because I believe that in order for you to be successful in your relationships, you would have to have thought through the other components so that you can contribute positively towards your relationships. Knowing who you are, why you are, helps you be able to align yourself with people and develop strong, healthy relationships. So that's why the order is strategic. Now, can you repeat the last part of your question just so I can answer?
You know, I wonder what it was.
It's okay.
I didn't write it down.
Okay. It's okay.
I think, why did you find that these were the most important elements for people to focus on in their life?
Right. So, like a cord, like with a human being, your core is the most central part of your body. It's not saying it's the only part that matters. Mm-hmm. It's saying it's the central part that matters. And with the Core 7, I believe these components are essentially the most important components of a human being's life. Not to say that there aren't other things that factor into our life, But generally speaking, when we can strengthen these specific areas, I believe it improves our overall production, our overall productivity of life. Mm.
Yeah, no, that makes sense to me. And it sounds like how it's structured is that they're in that order, and you're kind of scaffolding on one another, that you're learning certain things in each element that eventually will lead to having more of a holistic, life.
Right.
I know, because we've been working together, on how power and your book, Course 7, kind of are connected. But for the listeners, can you explain what the Power Program is and how it's kind of connected to the Course 7 book?
Okay. Well, essentially, Power is designed to teach people how to be more thoughtful in their thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So the theme behind our program is your thoughts, your choices, your life. And so the premise is your choices stem from your thoughts.
Right.
And your life is created by the choices you make. And so if we can teach people how to think correctly, take the mundane thought processes and revolutionize them so that they can see that there is opportunity in places where they might feel there is none to succeed and excel. What Power is designed to do.
It sounds very CBT-esque.
Okay.
And some people know I'm not a big fan of CBT. Ironically, I lost my train of thought.
It's okay.
CBT-esque. Right, so I'm going to play devil's advocate a bit, because I know some of the listeners are probably wondering this, but who are we to say that some people are thinking wrong?
Right. Well, that's a good question. I'm not here to so much challenge a person by saying, oh, you think completely wrong. Don't think like that. Power is simply a program where we want to suggest different outlooks or different perspectives that give people an opportunity to be more thoughtful about their perspectives and positions. It's in no means are we trying to say this is the way to do it, this is how it is, and this is how it will be. But I believe we all have the answers in life. They're always within us. And so Power is simply a vehicle that I use to help people realize the thoughts and the ideas that are already within them, bringing clarity so that they can be more productive and more intentional. But by no means are we saying this is the way it is,
right?
Because we don't have the ability to understand a person's complete makeup in life. Everyone is different, everyone has different goals, experiences, and circumstances that surround decisions that they make every day. All we're doing is we're just having thoughtful discussions about those things in hope that through those discussions, the participants will be able to take that information and be able to filter it towards their specific life.
So it sounds very much of a self-development or self-awareness program.
Right.
Would you say that Power could, in some respects, if it was twisted around a bit, be fit for adults as well?
Most definitely. It's not exclusive to a particular age group. It could definitely expand to a larger age group, because the thing is, we're dealing with life on a whole. And so whether you are 15 or whether you are 45, there is always an unknown aspect to life. And so what Power does is it takes you where you specifically are, and it helps gives you perspectives and thoughts to think about in pursuing the unknowns of life. And we all face those unknowns. So it can definitely be geared to an older audience, a younger audience. I think it's versatile in that sense.
I mean, it sounds great that it would be used for social service training. I can see some definitely child and youth care workers or social workers benefiting from Power. I know I've come to learn a lot from it. So thank you for that.
That's awesome to hear.
let's zone it in a bit. You know, currently power is running in within low-income community, the York Southwestern community of Toronto.
Yeah.
Why did you find it important to have a power, to have a program like power in this low-income community with marginalized youth? Why did you think it needed to be created?
That's a good question. I believe it needed to be created because when you come from a low income, high risk environment, sometimes the way you look at yourself is you shape that based on what you see around you. And what we wanted to do, or what I wanted to do with creating power, was create a greater self-awareness for the youth in the area, for them to discover their goals and dreams that are outside of what they might see in the community. And so being in a space, being in the space that we've created, they get to come outside of their norm. They get to come outside of their norm, and they get to have conversations that they probably wouldn't have outside of the program. Conversations about their purpose, conversations about what they like, conversations about how to possibly overcome different challenges that they're facing in their community. And overall, the goal is, so being able to see through that, they're able to think about what they want to do for themselves, and it will be not a picture painted by what they see around them, but essentially it will be a picture that is painted by what they see within themselves.
I think that's so very much needed in terms of like low income communities, because I, through my work and advocacy work, I've seen a lot of youth just kind of be put in a box by society, and the youth thinking that this is all that they can live in, and this is all that they could know, right? And it's, you know, I see the power within power of kind of pushing outside of that limit and saying, you don't have to, you know, live in some sort of circumstance that society has kind of given to you. And it's really challenging the thoughts that young people may be going through living in the neighborhoods such as this. Often we hear, you know, some youth who've kind of made it out of the community. As much as I don't like that type of analogy, power really for me seems to kind of let youth know that you can make it.
Right.
You can be
definitely
going beyond what you think your life just is.
Definitely. And just to speak on that, there's something I always love to coin, and it's, the problem is not the problem, it's the way you view the problem that's the problem. And so oftentimes youth in low-income areas view the area as the problem or the challenge. And so I can't get ahead because, you know, I don't have the means to get ahead, or I can't focus in school because of these external factors in my community. Whether that be in their family, whether that be in their place of education, whether that even be in the community, in the schoolyard, or on the basketball court, whatever those challenges are, they look at those things as the problem. Whereas we want them to understand that it is not those things that are the problem, it's the way you're viewing those things as the problem. And if you can have a correct outlook on those challenges, you'll be able to rise above them and not use those as limiters to your potential.
Right. Yes, I agree 100%. I have, say that again,
The problem is not the problem, it's the way you view the problem that's the problem.
I love that. I got chills, you know, hearing that, because it, you know, it's so true. And often, you know, we see youth just seeing an issue kind of face value, or the situation that they're living in a little bit of a face value.
Right.
And what you're really saying is it's really how you view it.
Right.
And how you view your situation.
Right. And
the first day of our program, the Power Program, something beautifully came out of that, and it was this thought that basically said, don't just look at things, look through things. And so when you look at your community, you can look at the challenges of the community. And when you just look at anything on the outset, sometimes it might not be inviting. And that's why there's a saying, don't judge a book by its cover. Mm-hmm. And so you can be in a low income community, but still see the positive things happening and still see the potential for growth and opportunity. I was talking to a friend the other day, and I was mentioning, we were talking about a lot of the changes that are happening in this immediate community. And I asked him a question. I said, if you took the population of people that live at Bathurst and Shepherd, and you move them into this immediate community, and you took the people in this community and move them into the Bathurst and Shepherd community, in 10 years, what community would thrive? And he said, well, clearly the Bathurst and Shepherd community would thrive because they're in a better situation. But then the question I asked him was, but they needed to have a certain mindset to get in that situation. They didn't just wake up and buy a house or buy a car. They had to position themselves to be able to be in that environment so that they could thrive. And so the challenge is not so much the environment, it's the mentality to thrive.
I love it. I may title the episode that, The Mentality to Thrive.
Okay, beautiful.
Oh. So I just want to switch gears just a little bit.
Sure.
Because I know you have lived in this community for your whole life.
Yeah.
What are some of the gaps you've noticed in York Southweston and working with marginalized youth? And how can people that work with youth kind of address some of these gaps that could,
there's so much things we could say in that area, but one of the things I've noticed, and I'll say this more in a general sense, mm-hmm. is when we're dealing with a lot of low income communities, I find that we take reactive measures instead of proactive measures to finding solutions or creating solutions. And so oftentimes in our communities, we deal with things based on the fact that the problem has gotten to the point where it needs to be dealt with, or something needs to be put in place for it not to further escalate. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think we need to begin to have more thoughtful conversations on how to prevent or restructure things so that the issues that we're finding, such as a lot of youth are challenged from a standpoint of identity, simply because a lot of the youth in this particular community come from single homes. I believe 40% of singles in Toronto, there's a stat that says come from this immediate community.
Oh, wow.
And so if you think about that, that's saying there's a lot of youth in this community that grew up in a one-parent home. Oftentimes when I'm in Mississauga or when I'm in Pickering, the surroundings is much different. You'll see families, you'll see husbands and wives and children outside walking dogs and jogging and doing things of that nature. Whereas in this community, you find a lot of mothers solely by themselves in playgrounds watching their children play. And so I think dynamics like that create challenges in social services, because you're trying to paint a picture of wholeness to a individual, but they live in a place of brokenness.
Okay.
Not in so much a sense that they don't have a two-parent home, but in the sense that the challenges that sometimes come with having a one-parent home financially, mm-hmm. and having the challenges of you possibly having to step up at an earlier age, take on more responsibilities, having the challenges of whether it's financial, now having to succeed in an academic environment, where oftentimes those environments are not specifically speaking to your home need or your home challenges. It's more speaking to your where you need to be in your career or as far as what you need to do professionally. And that's fine because school has its place for that. But then when they come to social services, it has to be much more than we're trying to help you just get a career. It's we want to stand in the gap for the places, we want to stand in the gap and support you in the places that you might not have supported because the school system doesn't cater to certain things and our communities in and of itself aren't self-sustained and self-functional that deal with those issues as a community.
It sounds like Power kind of attempts to address some of these challenges that you're talking about.
Definitely.
Is that right to say?
Definitely.
So with that being said, how?
Well, the first thing Power does is it tries to create an awareness of self. Mm-hmm. We attempt to have thoughtful dialogues, activities that cause the participants to think about themselves a little bit more, think about themselves outside of their communities, think about themselves outside of their limitations. And we also address goal setting. And affirmations is another big thing. I think because of the stigmas that come with living in a low-income community, sometimes you do not have the right system or the right belief system behind your goal to push you towards your goal. And so one of the biggest things for Power is we want to empower the youth through affirmation and teaching them the power of affirmation so that they can apply it to their lives. So in their sphere, wherever they are, they can have the ability to take control of their situations through the words they say to themselves. But I wanted to say something else, and like you, the thought kind of just slipped me, but it's going to come back. Goal setting is another big thing, because without a goal, you just have a dream. And oftentimes, the youth in this community don't even have a dream. Mm-hmm. They weren't, they because of their environment, they have not thought about their life outside of the radius of this community. And so Power attempts to address that dream component that doesn't necessarily get addressed in an academic setting, where we get them dreaming. We get them talking about dreams that they have, potential ideas that they want to do, and through that, we can then create goals. We can create a tangible plan that says, this is your end goal, but these are the steps that you can take to get there. And with that plan, what we're doing is we're creating a sense of purpose, a sense of hope, a sense of being with that individual that empowers them to now say, well, my goal, I have a goal and it's beyond my community, but it's attainable at the same time.
Music to my ears. We are, believe it or not, running out of time.
Wow, no way.
So I'm going to ask you the lovely trademark question of your right to speak.
Okay.
What does advocacy mean to you?
To me, advocacy is giving a voice to the voiceless. Giving a voice to the voiceless, and that doesn't necessarily mean just people
right.
in and of itself. I think policies and systems that are necessary to push our society forward, push our communities forward. Advocacy is creating, shedding a light on those things, and then creating a system that brings enlightenment and solution
right.
to those things. That's what it means personally to me. And that's how I pursue living out, trying to be an advocate for youth in my community.
So when you say voice for the voiceless, does advocacy in that meaning sometimes mean that you have to speak for people, or is it speaking with them?
I think it's both.
Mm.
I think sometimes people are voiceless not because of external limitations. I think sometimes people are voiceless because they haven't learned to use their voice. And so sometimes it takes another person who can see the problem, identify the issues, and see a solution to speak up on behalf of the person who can see the problem but can't really articulate the solutions or articulate a plan to for change or anything of that nature. So it's partly speaking with those that have a need, but also at the same time speaking on behalf of those that don't know how to speak for themselves.
I think your definition and what you just said is so important, and I just want to highlight is that sometimes people really don't know that they have the voice or don't know how to advocate for themselves.
Right.
And that's such, for me, an important piece, and that happens in so many different types of marginalized communities.
Right.
From disability to Black to old to young, it happens in so many different spheres, and I often think that when we often define advocacy, there's an emphasis on, you know, we need to speak with, but sometimes if the person doesn't know how to advocate, we can't speak with because they don't know how to work with you,
right?
So it's kind of teaching those skills too.
Right. And I think for anything positive or negative that we see in our society, it's a product of someone who advocated for it.
Right.
So if you want to see change in your communities or in your society, it's going to take someone or a group of people, something, a system to create that dialogue for that change or whatever steps or action plan is necessary. But yeah, that's what it is for me. And I believe personally, as we have these conversations and couple them with workshops and programs, creating that dialogue and also meeting people at their level. Not saying that you're above them, but you're being real about their issues and you're not sugarcoating the challenges that they have, but you're creating a dialogue that says, I'm not going to avoid the root of the issues. We want to advocate not for, I'll say it like this, we don't want to advocate for the branch, we want to advocate for the root. We don't want to just simply advocate on the issues surrounding the issue, we want to deal with the issue, because once we deal with the issue, then we can become more productive, we can become more strategic, we can become more thoughtful in creating better communities, we can be more thoughtful in creating better social service programs and supports, but that can't come unless we're really being truthful and transparent with the root. And so my passion is simply shedding light and creating a voice for the root in hopes that we can change or pull out the root and plant something that will grow into something greater.
I think that's a great way to end this episode.
Okay.
Before we end off, do you have anything else that you want to add?
Yeah. Follow me up on Instagram, RaquelMackenzie1. The information for the book, The Core 7, is available. There's a link on my Instagram, but the link, again, will be here for you. I would love for you to check out the book, The Core 7, Building and Mastering Your Best You. It's an opportunity for you to get a different perspective of what a holistic life means, and at the same time, as you walk through the book, you get an opportunity to set goals, create a plan of action. And I also have a component in the book where I have a 21 question assessment, so we can evaluate where you are, and then I have words of advice, so little encouragements to push you towards your better self.
Thank you again for being on the show. It was great having you.
Great being here.
Your Right to Speak will be posted on the second Wednesday of every month. If you are a child youth that would be like to be on the show, or if you have an idea of what topic you think we should be talking about, you can email me at yourrighttospeak@gmail.com. That's yourrighttospeak@gmail.com. Let's raise awareness together.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast. Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Visit us on our website at cycpodcast.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/cycpodcast.